ജയം ശുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാജയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദ ജയം നിത്യലീല പ്രവിഷ്ടോം വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാജയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ഷഹരദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗര ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ട ഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനയ്ക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമിക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമിക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ് പുരി ധാമിക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൗർ പ്രേമാനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരു ആൻഡ് ശ്രീ ഗൗരാംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശീല പ്രഭുപാദ നമോ വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിൻ നാമിനെ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വദേവം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണേ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ജയതി ജഗതി മായാം യസ്യ കായാധവസ്തേ വചനരചനമേകം കേവലം ചാകലയ്യ ധ്രുവപദമഭിയാദോ യൽകൃപാദോ ധ്രുവോയം സകലകുശലപാത്രം ബ്രഹ്മപുത്രം നതോസ്മി. So we were discussing last Sunday the introduction to Narada Bhakti Sutram, isn't it? So there, as I mentioned before, that Bhakti Sutram discusses what is known as Parabhakti. Parabhakti means, as you have seen, that bhakti has two aspects. One is Parabhakti, other one is Aparabhakti. Parabhakti is what is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is Parabhakti. Aparabhakti is what is called as Sadhana Bhakti. What we are in the Sadhana stage, that is called Aparabhakti. So this Sadhana Bhakti is not given a lot of importance in the Bhakti Shastra. In the science of Bhakti, Parabhakti is more important. So not the Aparabhakti. Aparabhakti is in the sadhana stage, what one executes, that is known as aparabhakti. That's not given a lot of importance because sadhana one executes with a goal, isn't it? With a goal one executes sadhana. Whereas parabhakti is not executed with any goal. That you will see. When you see this whole Narada Bhakti Sutram is full of subtleties. And when you understand that, the subtle side what Narada Maharshi is talking. Practically, in Narada Bhakti Sutram, there are four great sages involved. It's their opinion about bhakti. One, Sri Narada Maharshi himself, which we all know who is Narada Maharshi is. Then Vedavyasa Maharshi's opinion about bhakti. How Vedavyasa Maharshi sees bhakti. That is discussed in the Narada Bhakti Sutram. Narada Maharshi brings Vedavyasa Maharshi into it and says how Vedavyasa's opinion about it. Then, opinion from Shandilya Maharshi. Shandilya Maharshi was Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Devi, their family priest, you can say, or Acharya for the family. Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Devi, they had their own Acharyas who advised them in their different ceremonies they were performed at home. That was Shandilya. Shandilya Maharshi is their family priest, you can say, or who has helped them in everything, in their spiritual life also. Shandilya is a great authority. Shandilya Sutram is there on the Bhakti process. So Shandilya Maharshi is quoted in the Bhakti Sutram. Then who else? Garga Maharshi, who gave name to Krishna, who performed the name-giving ceremony for Krishna. Garga Maharshi, he is also accepted as authority on Bhakti. So, Garga Maharshi, Shandilya Maharshi, Srinarada Maharshi and Vedavyasa Maharshi. These four sages, it's their opinion what you will hear in the next many classes. What they are talking about bhakti, how they see bhakti. Why Narada Bhakti Sutram is so popular? Because this book is practically 5,000 years old. And it is at the time when Krishna was there, and when all these great sages were present in this world, book was compiled at that time, from their opinion. And Sri Narada Maharshi felt the need to compile this book. He felt the need for compiling this book. We'll come to that later. So, in the first chapter of this Bhakti Sutram, Narada Maharshi discusses about the Parabhakti, the internal and the external side of it. The internal side as well as the external side of it. But, and in the second chapter, Narada Maharshi talked about the wonderful side of the experiences of the Parabhakti state. Although this bhakti, Parabhakti, what he has discussed here, is difficult to experience at our present stage, at least we should know that this is where we should reach at the end. That's the goal of all this Bhakti Sutram, is to take us to that stage where proper bhakti is executed. If you remember, in the Bhagavad Gita there is a verse there, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Na Shochati Na Kankshati Samas Sarveshu Bhudeshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. Krishna says there. There he says that Brahma Bhuta platform, you begin from there, and then it, Brahma Bhuta state is that you are freed from the identity with the body. You come to the state of the pure state of the soul. You are not identifying with the body anymore. And Na Shochati Na Kankshati. There is no hankering, no lamentation at that time. All desires have gone, left you. Everything has left. All desires have left, all planning has stopped, everything has gone. You're completely above the bodily level. After reaching that stage, Sama Sarveshu Bhudeshu, when you get to that stage, you will see that every living entity in this creation is Krishna's expansion. In other words, you have started realizing that only Krishna is present in this world, nothing else. At the moment, we see in the form of Namarupam. Namarupam means in the different form of names and forms. We give a particular name to a particular form, isn't it? Everything in this world, if you take, everything has got a name and everything has got a form, isn't it? For a particular form, we give a particular name, and that is called Namarupam. Namarupam, what happens is, with Namam and Rupam, generally our mind interacts with the world outside. And with each nama rupam, or each form, name and form, we develop a special attachment or an aversion, isn't it? With different personalities or different objects in this world, there will be a certain attachment and aversion in us. That is natural. In a natural way it happens. We like something, we don't like something. We hate somebody or we love somebody, in that way. So nama rupam, or name and form outside, we have this attachment and aversion. Krishna is saying, Sri Narada Maharshi is saying there, that in as this namam and rupam, when that goes away from our vision, that is that Brahmabuddha state. Brahmabuddham state is that, when namarupam has no more importance anymore. You don't give any importance to anyone's form of the body or name of that person. Name of the person. That is that freedom from that material existence. So after that is, Krishna says, Bhagavad Gita says, that samas sarveshu bhudeshu, only in that state you see all living entities on a same platform. Otherwise it's not possible. Although we all talk about seeing everyone on an equal level, it's only possible at that stage. Samas sarveshu bhudeshu. Krishna saying, after that, mad bhaktim lebhade param. Parabhakti will start from that point. So you can imagine, parabhakti is the pure devotee state. A devotee who is in the pure consciousness, he is in that state. Mad bhaktim lebhade param. He has no complaints about this world. He has no attachment to anyone in this world. He has no aversion to anyone. And he is purely in the state of Krishna consciousness. So, here, in the first chapter, in this Narada Bhakti Sutram, Narada Maharshi discusses about that parabhakti. Parabhakti is the topic that is discussed here. Other things have no importance as far as the sages are concerned. Our sadhana bhakti, our sadhana and all that, it has its own limitations. It will take us only to a certain limit. But if realizations hasn't happened after that, then we have to see why it is happening. Why the realization hasn't come to us. All these higher realizations must happen at that stage. That's why it is said like this, that parabhakti is discussed as the only goal at the end. Madbhaktim lebhade param. That parabhakti is the only goal. Everything else is less important. So, in the Second chapter, when one comes to that Parabhakti stage, he becomes a little isolated in this world. He is not looking for, because inside pure love has developed inside for Krishna. For pure Krishna consciousness has developed inside. The result of that is that person wants to execute his spiritual life in solitude and in loneliness. Like you will see, if you look into all the great acharyas in every tradition, they become more withdrawn from this world when they have been internally more developed, spiritually more developed. You can see Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to get up in the middle of the night and start to practice this spiritual activities he used to perform in the middle of the night. Withdraws himself from this world because at that point they don't want any kind of interference from anyone. Because they are in their own state, that realized state, in that they are enjoying that spiritual life. So that is that Parabhakti state. And that is what is discussed in the second chapter. That's also known as Ekanta Bhakti, in solitude, in loneliness. One execute that spiritual life. So, then in the third chapter, in the Narada Bhakti Sutram, talks about the different sadhana one can execute in their sadhana bhakti, in the sadhana stage. And in the activities of the a pure devotee, this is what is discussed in the fourth chapter. Fourth chapter discusses the activities of the pure devotee, how he engages himself in. They're all spoken with very limited few words, very few words he has used to express this, and therefore a lot of explanation is necessary, what that words mean. As I mentioned before in the last class, that sutrams were developed for only one reason, in order to remember things. They put it in this code form, aphorisms they are called, isn't it? So in a coded way they talk, and once you have those two words in your head, then you know what it is pointing at. So that was that one. And in the last chapter, in this Narada Bhakti Sutram, Sri Narada Maharshi talks about a devotee who has reached that stage, how beneficial his presence in this world is, how much he can be of benefit to so many others. This is what is discussed in the fifth chapter. Though this fifth chapter, five chapters are referring to that. So, Parabhakti, beginning itself, the first sutram in the Srimad, in the Bhakti Sutram, it says, Athadho bhaktim vyakhyasyama. That's how we, Hari Om. Athadho, right now, I will comment on bhakti, he says. I'll comment on bhakti. Normally, Athadho bhaktim vyakhyasyama. I'm going to start vyakhyanam. Vyakhyanam means commentary. Commentary on bhakti. Athadho bhaktim vyakhyasyama, he says here. So, why commentary? Normally, when do you say a commentary? Commentary is when you have already a literature. Say, for example, Srimad Bhagavatam. Then there is commentary on that, isn't it? Different commentators on Bhagavatam. Sridhara Swami, Madhusudana Saraswati, and Vallabhacharya, and Viriraghavacharya, and many others have commented on Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the commentary. But here, interesting thing is, Narada Maharshi starts, Athadho bhaktim vyakhyasyama. I'll start discussing about bhakti. I'll comment on bhakti, he says. So, when there is no literature already there, how come he is saying like this, that I'm going to discuss, I'm going to comment on bhakti? Because this bhakti is not something that can be written in a book. It is anubhuti. Anubhuti means one's own realization it is. Sri Narada Maharshi has realized about bhakti in his own spiritual life. And from that realization, on that realization, he want to expand. It is that realization he is commenting upon. Narada Bhakti Sutram is a commentary of his own realizations about bhakti. That is why it's said like that. Athado bhaktim vyakhyasyama. I am going to talk about bhakti, he says. Whose bhakti? Whatever he has experienced in his path, in self-realization, when he reached that state of pure bhakti, what he experienced, that's what he wants to discuss. So, one thing important to remember here, any shastram, when we study, the result will depend on the person who is studying also. It's not only on the speaker. A person who is receiving that message, how he takes it. That's also important. Because any subject you understand, different people have different capacity, isn't it? To absorb things. And it is true in this substance also that so when one has some understanding of the bhakti process, it helps a lot. And that is why Srinada Maharshi, when he begins this chapter, Adhigarinam Ashaste Bhalasiddhiru Visheshada Upayam Deshagalabhyam Sandhyasmin Sahagarina. In other words, time, place, circumstances, all that, they are secondary. It is the your absorption in the topic is more important. In this subject, he says there, it is in Shastram, it is always like that. Time, place, circumstances is not important. Normally we say it's the time, place and circumstances, isn't it? But in this particular subject, Adhyarina Mashaste Balasiddhir Visheshada, it is how much you absorb in that yourself. If you are reflecting on it, how much you reflect on it, and how much you are devoting your own time to understand this, how serious and Shraddha is there, dependent on that, the results will come. Upaya deshagalabhyam sandhyasmin sahakarinam. All other issues are sahakarina. They are secondary. They are not primary. They are not primary. That is the first thing what he mentions here. So, normally, as I also mentioned this before, in Jnanamargam, there are certain qualifications mentioned before you enter into the Jnana process. If that's no qualifications are not there, then it is difficult to make progress in the process of knowledge. So therefore, they call it a Sadhana Chatushtayam. Sadhana Chatushtayam means that before you come to Jnanamargam, you execute this Sadhana for Chatushtayam. There are four of them. And through that, you reach a certain state of maturity to hear the process of knowledge. Hear about the process of knowledge. They call it as Nityam Anitya Vastu Vivekam, Ihamutra Bhala Bhoga Viragam, Shamadamadi Shal Sambhati, and Mumukshatvam. What that means is, Nityam Anitya Vastu Vivekam, that a person must have a definite idea in his mind that he knows what is permanent and what is temporary in this world. One who thinks this world is permanent, then he has no choice. He has to wait. He's not ready for it yet. One who is thinking the world is permanent, many people do think, isn't it? They think this world is permanent and this is a place to enjoy, or this is a place they're going to make their life comfortable or whatever they have in their mind, all those things. Nityam, anityam, vastu vivegam. So one must have, before coming to spiritual life, one must have analyzed these things in his own mind and came to the firm conclusion that this world is not worthwhile taking very seriously. That conclusion must come. If you take the world very seriously, then it is not a devotee's life. Devotee is not meant to take this world very seriously, nor a jnani either. The world will go its own. We are only happen to be here. That's all it is. That's our connection with it. We just happen to be here, nothing else than that. World will go its own way, we'll go our way. So, to permanently break that connection with this world, that's known as Nitya Anitya Vastu Vivegam. Vastu Vivegam means that discriminating nature in a person to see what is permanent and what is temporary. World is temporary. That will come, that will just continuously changing. Everything is changing in this world. How can you call this as permanent? And similarly, the body is changing. So body is not even permanent. Mind is not permanent. Mind is temporary. So intelligence is temporary. False ego is temporary. Everything is temporary except the self inside. So this discrimination must come to a person before he wants to make the next move in the spiritual side. Only then Shastram will have any effect on that person. When he is studying physics and chemistry and studying Srimad Bhagavatam also and trying to mix these two things together, it won't work. Because all the other things are related to the material world, related to matter. This is the science of the soul. So that's where that clarity is necessary. Then, what else? In order to stay in that state of consciousness, one has to have that renunciation, detachment from this world. That's why it's mentioned, Ihamutra Bhara Bhoga Viragam. No more desire for sense enjoyment in this world. Continue, complete withdrawal from the senses. Because withdrawal from the senses means withdrawal from the world of the mind. Mind is the one who takes through all the senses to this world, sense enjoyment. And then third, the shamadamadi shal sambati. In a brief way I'm saying this because it's not our main topic here. But just to mention that in Shastram, while studying Shastram, qualifications are important. A person, what state he is, that's important. Shamam, damam, uptiditsha, uparadi, shraddha, samadhanam. Six things. That is, senses, control of the senses, control of the mind, tolerance to everything what goes on in this world, uparadi, able to fix the mind on the spiritual realization, self-realization, shraddha, complete, sa shraddha, isn't it? Shraddha means that one who is completely attention on, focused on this process of realization. Shastrasya guruvakyasya satyabuddhyavadharana sa shraddha. In other words, for him, only important thing is Shastram, what Shastram says, or the words of the spiritual master. So such a person can make progress on the path of knowledge. Shamam, damam, tidiksha, uparadi, shraddha, samadhanam. Then last one, above all these three, he says, they say, Shastram says, he should have mumukshatva. Mumukshatva means a strong desire inside to escape from here, from this mess of material life. A strong desire, intense, very intense desire. I don't want to come back here anymore and to be part of this miseries of this world. That intense desire to free oneself from material existence, that's called mumukshatva. So these three things are requirement for jnani, for a jnana margam. Similarly, if you go into yoga, yajna sutram or karma mimamsa, it's called. If you go into karma mimamsa, that means Vedavyasa Maharshi had two disciples. One of them was Jaimini. This Jaimini learned karmagandam very well. And he introduced this karma mimamsa. From that, you know, you must have read in the Bhagavadam also, many places talking about Ashwamedham, Rajasuyam, all kinds of sacrifices mentioned there. Agnishtomam, Adiratram, Vajavayam, they are all different sacrifices. These sacrifices were performed by the great kings and very rich people who could afford to perform, because these sacrifices are part of the Vedic Yajnam. Yajnam means sacrifices of the Vedas. Karmagandam we call it, isn't it? So this karmagandam is such that in order to study, come to karmagandam, there is certain requirements for that. They insist, Jaimini says, Vedavyasa Maharshi's disciple, Jaimini, famous personality, he says there that in order to come to karmagandam, first thing is you should completely memorize all the Vedas. Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam, Atharvavedam. That is a qualification. You should memorize them and should be able to recite them without any fault in there, in the Vedic hymns, the Vedic hymns. So that is that one. Now, if you come to Yoga Margam, this is another process now. Yanagandam, Karmagandam. Then if you come to the Yoga Margam, which is the Patanjali's yoga system, they also have requirements, isn't it? What is that? Yamam, Neyamam, Asanam, Pranayamam, Pratyaharam, Dharana, Dhyanam, Samadhi. Ashtanga Yogam. So there they insist on yamam, niyamam, all control of mind, control of senses. You should be able to sit in a place properly, asanam. Then you should be performing pranayamam to get that purification inside the body. Pratyaharam, able to stop the activities of the mind, able to focus on one topic of the soul. Like this, there are restrictions there also. So jnanamargam, you have seen the problem, the preparations needed. Karma Margam has its requirements. Yoga Margam has its requirements. What Krishna is saying, Narada Maharshi is saying here, in Bhakti Margam, no requirement. Open to all. That is the beauty of Bhakti. Bhakti is open to anyone, irrespective of where he comes from, what community he belongs to. Simply understand what Narada Maharshi is going to say to us, that in Bhakti process, it is a open to all. It doesn't matter. You may have no qualification. You may have all the qualification. It doesn't matter. Irrespective of what, whatever it is, you are, and everyone is entitled to come to the process of bhakti. Because bhakti is so powerful that he can purify a person in that way. You know, so, only thing that in bhakti, the main difficulty is one should have strong faith in the words, Krishna's words. That is the most important thing. If you have no faith in Krishna's words, and if you try to understand Krishna's words, then it takes time to come to perfection. Because if you look into Bhagavatam, you will see there, Krishna says to Uddhava at one stage, Uddhava, there is only three processes I have established for self-realization. Three processes. Jnanam, Karmam, Bhakti. Yadarchayamal kathasu jada shraddho bina puman na nirvinno nadi sakto bhakti yogostu siddhidaha. Krishna is saying to Uddhava, yadarchayamal kathasu, somebody the other, by chance, yadarchaya, or by Krishna's desire, you can say, Malkathasu, someone got interested in hearing about Krishna. Yeah. In hearing about Krishna, someone gets interested. Jada Shraddhobino Puman, that his Shraddha or attention has come to hear about Krishna. And that person, Nanarvino Nadi Satto, he is not fully renounced. He still have a lot of attachment to this world. He has attachment to this world. In other words, he lives probably a householder life or a life with some material activities associated with that. Na adisakto. On the other hand, he knows very well that this life is not everything. At the end, there you have to leave everything here and go from here. So such people, Krishna is saying, bhakti yogostu siddhida. For him, bhakti process is the best. This is Krishna's opinion. Yadrachayamal kathasu jada shraddho bhima puman na nirvinno na adisakto bhakti yogostu siddhidaha. Bhakti yogam will help that person a lot. Bhagavata dharmam, that is why Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled Srimad Bhagavatam for us. Only for this reason, knowing very well that in this age particularly, people will have a difficulty. You won't have the strength of the sages who lived in the age of Satyugam, who were willing to or go like Dhruvamaharaj to the forest at the age of 5 and search for the truth. Even at the age of 85, we don't want to search the truth. We want to talk about the age of 5. So you can see, Vedavyasa has seen what is coming, the people's nature, knowing very well. That's why he put that in the Bhagavatam. Yadrachayam al kathasu. If somebody gets interested in Krishna somehow, jada shraddhovina puman, such a person, even if he is nanarvino nadi sakto, if he is not too attached, if he is not fully renounced, or if he is too attached, then they are not suitable. He must have a little attachment for Krishna. Then it will help, he says. Then bhakti yogam will suit that person very well. Nanarvino nadi sakto. If a person is very attached to his work in this world, or his wealth in this world, or his sense enjoyment in this world, for him bhakti yoga won't suit. For a jnani who has completely renounced to this world and is simply looking for the absolute truth, for him bhakti yoga won't suit. For a person who is in the process of karmam, engaged in a lot of activities, you can see sometimes people, isn't it, very absorbed in this world with big, big projects in their head, big, big plans in their head. They believe so much that they have to do a lot in this world. They are so convinced about it. They have to change the world upside down. So if such an extent they are convinced about their karmam, that they are attached to it, then also bhakti won't suit them. So Krishna has put them into category. What suits whom? That's what Krishna is saying there. Yadrachaya mal kathasu jada shraddhobi na puman na nirvino na adisakto bhakti yogostu siddhida. He will become one who, the devotee knows, he is not able to throw away everything and walk out like that jnani. He is not able to do that because he has some attachment here still. On the other hand, he knows all this life in this world is also temporary. One day you have to leave and go. He also is aware of that. So such people, he is not too attached or too renounced, that category of people. In other words, if you look into the world, majority of the people fall into that category. Jnana Yogam and all is only for very few people. Similarly, Karma Yogam is also for few people. But majority of the people will fall into the category of bhakti. That is why it's been specifically defined like this. Who fits in where? Who is the qualifications? So, saying that, he says here, Nrubinno nadi sakto bhakti yogasya siddhidam. So one who is qualified for bhakti is what is the qualification for hearing this process. So if you look into Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna will say exactly the same thing. What did he say? Abhijayal sudirajaro bhajadeyamam ananyabhak sadureva samandavya samyag vyavasidohisa kshipram bhavati daralma shashvachandim nigachadi kaundeya pradijanihi name bhakta pranashari. In the 9th chapter, 2 verses, Krishna says, Abhijayal sudirajaro, one person who has gone into the in a bad way and he has understood, he has developed some bhakti inside somehow, even if he has all that bad habits, Krishna is saying there, if he has become a devotee and if he has taken me seriously, Vajadevam Ananyabhag. Ananyabhag means seriously taken Krishna without any reservations. In other words, he is a sadhu. Krishna says he is a sadhu. Sadhureva samandavya. Samyak vyavasidohisa. Very soon he will become a perfection. He will reach perfection. Kshipram bhavati dharmalma. He will become a dharmalma very soon. Shashvat chandim nigachari. He will reach the final state of peace. Shashvat chandim nigachari. Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashari. Arjuna tried to understand this, that my devotee will never perish. He will get through all those problems which he has to go through in the beginning. So it is in the Bhagavad Gita also, it is the same thing mentioned. One has to accept him as a sadhu, even if he has performed some abominable activities in his previous life. Why is that? Why does Krishna say it like that? Because at least he has come to the right path. He has come to the right path. Krishna gives a note of importance to that. Krishna says, at least he has given up his material life. He has turned to me. That it's enough, he says. That itself is a guarantee from Krishna. Then, then if you look into Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Ekadasha Skandam, Krishna gives a lot of examples of those devotees, isn't it? He mentions that these are all my devotees, and he gives a list there. Bahavo malpadam prapta twashtra kayadhavadaya vrishaparva belirbhano mayaschadav bhishanaha sugrivo hanumanrsho gajogradhrovanik padaha vyadaha kubja vraje gopyo yajnavatnyastadha apare. He gives a list of people who are not from a very high background. Background means they are not brahmanas, or they are not highly learned in shastram, or they don't have any qualification. Some of them are demons, some of them are asuras, rakshasas, and all. And Krishna says there, all these people, because they came to me, they've all been put in a very high position. They have been given a very high position. High in the who are all they? Twashtra kayadhavadaya. Kayadhava means Prahlada. Kayadhu's son, Prahlada. Krishna considers his great devotee, isn't it? Prahlada. Similarly, Twashtra. Twashtra is Vishwarupa. It's a demonic family he has come from. Isn't it? Twashtra's son, Twashtra. Vrishabharva, king. Mahabali, Vanan, and Vibhishana. They're all from demonic families. All of them from demonic families. Then Sugriva, Vanara, is a monkey, isn't it? Sugriva. Hanuman, again. Narksha, Gajo, Gajendra. We have seen the story of Gajendra in the Bhagavadam. Gradhro Vanik Padhaha. Jadayu was a Gradhra. Gradhra was a bird, isn't it? And Vyadha, Dharma Vyadha, who was a butcher. Kubja, she was a more or less like a prostitute. Kubja. And Vraje Gopyo, Gopis of Vrindavanam. Yajnavatni, Brahmana's wives. Tadhapare. None of them, if you look into any one of them, except you can say that Hanuman had great education. Otherwise, all others, they belong to very, not a category from, you will expect very high standard of spiritual life. But they all became perfect, Krishna says, because they came to the process of bhakti. They took the process of bhakti. Then he says there, in the Bhagavadam, in the 12th chapter, that tenadhida shruti ganaha. None of them has studied shruti. They never had any knowledge of the shastram. No upasida mahatamaha. Neither they have served any great personality. They had nothing actually to their credit. Tenadhida shrudiganaha. No upasida mahatamaha. They have not even served any great personality. Avradaha. They have not even performed any austerities either. Tapta tapasaha. In other avrata taptadapasaha. You cannot say they have performed any kind of vratam. Vratam means no ekadashis, no kind of fasting, nothing. They lived an ordinary life in this world. Avradaha. Tapta tapasaha. They never performed any tapasa. Tapasa means they didn't go to the forest or execute very severe austerities or penances. Avrada tapta tapasaha. They only became devotees only for one reason. Salsangamam upagadaha. They took salsangam very seriously. That was their success. If you take salsangam seriously, salsangam will take you there. You don't have to do anything. Just sit in the salsangam, the whole group will go and you will get there. That is the point Krishna is making there. That tenadhida shudiganaha nobhasita mahatamaha avrada tapta tapasaha salsangamam upagadaha. You may wonder why this salsangam is so important. You see, out of the five senses of knowledge we have, isn't it? We have five senses of knowledge. You know, the eyes, the ears, the nose, and the taste, and the touch. Shabdam, sparsham, rupam, rasam, gandham. Isn't it? These five things are the five senses of knowledge which we have. These five senses, they are called tanmatra. Tanmatra means, see, the material elements are there. Earth, water, air, ether, fire. Five material elements. These five material elements has got its tanmatra. Tanmatra means their subtle form. Their subtle form. For example, the earth, its subtle form is smell. Earth's subtle form is smell. Then, sabdam, rupam, rasam. Water, its subtle form is taste. Water's subtle form is taste. These are things to be kept in mind all the time, because when we are discussing further now, you will see why these things are important. So, the water, its subtle form is taste. And the earth's subtle form is smell. Gandham. Gandham with the earth. And taste with the water. Rupam. Then the form, that is a subtle form of fire. Form is the subtle form of fire. And touch is the sense of touch is a subtle form of air. Isn't it? Touching is the subtle form of the air. How do we know about air? Air when it touches us. Isn't it? So touching, that sense, is the subtle form of the material element, the air. Similarly, form of a particular thing is a subtle form of fire. Do you know why that is? Say, for example, something is burning. When the fire is burning that object, it will take the object of the fire, form of the object. So, for example, a wooden log is burning. The fire will take the form of that log. Isn't it? So, form is a subtle side of the fire. Sense of touch is a subtle form of the air. And the last one, shabdam or the sound, is the subtle form of the sky, of the space, in other words. Or the subtle form of the space is the sound, right? Now, if you look into these five tanmatra, they are called in shastram. Tanmatra means these subtle elements. Shabdam, sparsham, rupam, rasam, gandham. That means sound, touch, form, taste and smell. These five things, if you look into the Bhagavatam, you will see, in creation process, who was there first? First was the sound. It is from sound everything else has come. Okay? So, in our senses, if you look, it is the ears that is connected with the sound. So, in other words, the most subtle of all these five is the ear. Out of the five elements, and out of the five senses, it is the ears that is the most subtle of all. Yeah? It's the ear because it is connected with the sky or the space. When we look into the five material elements, earth, water, air, fire, air and ether. Ether is the last one. Isn't it? It is from ether. And when it comes grows and grows and grows further, when it comes to the most gross form, it is this earth. Earth is the most gross one. So, because of that, the nose is the most gross sense of all the five, and the ear is the most subtle of all the five. Do you understand what I'm saying? That ear is the most subtle of all the five, and nose is the most gross of all the five. The other four comes in between. And because Salsangam is directly related to the ear, so the hearing process, in the most subtle level you can operate when you are engaged in the ears. You are the best subtlety in you, in any person, will come into action when you are in the hearing process. When you are hearing Bhagavatam, hearing Bhagavad Gita, what's happening is, you are in your most subtle level. In other words, you have gone beyond the earth, water, air, fire, but you come to the platform of ether. And from after that, you are straight back into the Mahatattvam, into the Pradhanam, what they call it. In the creation process, if you look, you will see there. So that is the reason, because it is in the most subtle level, anything that is subtle in the Shastram, because Shastram is full of subtleties, very subtle things in the Shastram, to capture that, this ear is the most capable or the most qualified sense in our body. You can't understand by seeing everything. Seeing is one of them, isn't it? When you see, you can only see the form. And ears can't tell you about the spiritual realization. Eyes can't tell you. Eyes can only talk to you about a particular form. Similarly, a tongue can tell you about the taste of something, but it can't tell you about the subtlety of it. You can only taste some prasadam and tell you what it's like. Mm-hmm. Similarly, the nose can smell some flower and tell you something about it. You can see your own mind, if you look at it, you can see that. Whereas ear can take you to a much deeper level. Ear can take you to... Why? Because as soon as you hear, it goes straight into the heart. Straight into the heart. And you will start reflecting. You will pull yourself into that subtle side of it very easily than any other senses. That's the reason why it is said that the Salsangamam Upagada. Krishna is saying there in the Bhagavadam. He says there, Tenadida Shrutiganaha. They didn't hear any Shruti. He is disqualifying everybody else. He says, even those who didn't have any opportunity to hear. Gopis didn't hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Gopis didn't hear Bhagavad Gita. But in this Bhakti Sutram, Sri Narada Maharshi says, Yatha Vrajagopiganam. He considers them as the best devotees. So, devotion or bhakti is a process for anyone, open to all. It's just that what Krishna says here is that Salsangamam Ubhagadaha. That bhakti, what you carry from Salsangam, that is what will make that happen. Tenadhida Shrutiganaha Nopasida Mahattamaha Avrada Tapta Tavasaha Salsangamam Ubhagadaha. Bhagavadam says like that. Tenadhida Shrutiganaha. They didn't hear any Shruti. Any Shastram had no connection with any of these personalities mentioned there. No upasita mahatmaha. They did not execute in any kind of service to any great personality. Avrata tapta tapasaha. That they did not perform any kind of vratam or any kind of austerities in their life. Tapta tapasaha. No penances either. Only through salsangam they reached that state. Only through salsangam. We discussed this when we discussed the 12th chapter in the Canto 11. If you remember, each one of them, we saw how they reached that state. What was the salsangam they had? Gopis had salsangam with Krishna. Yajnavatnis had salsangam with Krishna and Balaram. Krishna says there at that time, isn't it? Avrata taptadabasaha salsangamam upagadaha. So, after saying that, he says here, Kevalena hibhavena gopyo gavo naga mrgaha yene mutadiyo nagaha siddhamami yuranjasaha. Then, only qualification they had was they just accepted me, Krishna says. They just accepted me as everything. And that includes gopis, the cows, the cowherd boys, and the animals. All of them. E anye mudadiyo nagaha. That similarly, many others who were very foolish people, they also took shelter of me. Siddha mami yuranjasaha. That they also became perfect in their spiritual life. Through process of bhakti. Just to tell us that bhakti process doesn't require any qualification as such. What is required is that this surrender to Krishna, accepting Krishna's word seriously. So, after saying that, they didn't have any. Shandilya Maharshi comes in and says at that point, Anindayoni adhikriyade parambaryat samanyavat. Anindayoni adhikriyade. Even if one has taken birth in a very difficult situation, Nindayoni means that one who has born in a family where there was no proper spiritual traditions in the family, if takes birth, even then they are qualified for bhakti. Bhakti, everybody is qualified. That's the point. Because truthfulness, non-violence, and devotion, these qualities you can find anywhere in the world. You can find anywhere in the world. These qualifications you can find. It is not limited to one country or one community. You will find that sometimes you will see this, certain qualities in certain people. They may be born anywhere, but qualification is there in them. Truthfulness, non-violence, peacefulness, and devotion to in their heart. So these things, you cannot ignore it. It has to be recognized. It's not the property of any one religious community or religious group. It is basic qualifications in spiritual life. There, if you want, you can look at this. If you have to Google it and see it yourself. There's one lady in America who has walked over 25,000 miles she called herself a peace pilgrim. If you want to Google and see yourself, peace pilgrim, her life history is mentioned there in a PDF format. After she left this world, she was born probably in 1918 or something like that and left in 1981. And came from a very poor family. But at the age of about 15, 16, she got this realization that I should not be taking from this world, rather I should be giving to this world. Some deeper realization like this has happened to her. And she decided that from that day onwards, she decided to go walking, 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 whole day walking, night walking. She took a one firm decision herself. If somebody gives me food, I will eat. And if somebody gives me shelter, I will sleep. Otherwise not. I won't work for it. But she was actually testing Krishna's words in the Bhagavad Gita. You can see this. Practically this is happening in this world. She took this decision. If somebody gives me food, I will eat. Because after all, she was so convinced that if Krishna was created this world, will she not provide me? That firm conviction in her mind. So, she started walking with this conviction. Many times she never had food, but she will fast. She says in that history how many days she fasted in one or two occasions. And some days there will be a big feast. Some people who have come to know about her, they invited her and gave her a feast. She ate that also. When you read that, and when you read Dattatreya Maharshi's story in the Srimad Bhagavatam, practically there is no difference. This is the interesting thing. We think that all this has happened 5,000 years ago, it cannot happen today. That's not true. It can happen today also. And it is happening still. Only thing is, we don't take notice of it. Their name may not have appeared in the Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. That is another thing. But the consciousness of that person, like exactly like Dattatreya Maharshi spoke about that in the Bhagavatam, that how he saw this world as a place for spiritual advancement and realization. How he, from 24 spiritual masters, he learned so many things. Exactly the same way this lady also, I don't know what her name is, mentioned there, peace pilgrim she calls it. And she took this vow, I will only accept food if Krishna provides me the food. And I'll only sleep if Krishna gives me a shelter. With this word, she walked 25,000 miles. By now, she has become very popular throughout America. And they were interviewing her in television programs and everything. But she will not ask anyone for... Money was given, immediately it was spent. It was not kept. That was another principle, what she followed very seriously. She talks about various things while walking, meets with a group of truck drivers in a restaurant. And they've heard about her. And they ask her, trying to speak to her about it. And she explains to them what her mission of what she is living in this world. And she talks about that, how bad it is to work so hard in this world without realizing this important aspect of life. So many things. It's only a small booklet. If you read it, you can find it interesting. Just to understand that consciousness of a person who is advancing on the path of spiritual life, you can see that there. Very much similar to what Dattatreya Maharshi is saying in the Bhagavatam. Not much difference than that. So the thing is this, that realization, self-realization, bhakti process, all this is possible anywhere in this world. It's not limited to one place or one group of people. It is that person's surrender to the truth that's much more matters than anything else. So Krishna also says this in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Mamchayo avyabhijarena bhakti yogena sevida sagunan samaditidan brahma bhuyaya kalpade. Krishna says Brahman realization will happen to a person, mamchayo avyabhijarena, one who he is not any more deviating, or avyabhijarena means actually the word is who is not a prostituting with the philosophy. Prostituting the philosophy means that abuse the philosophy, in other words. So, mamchayo avyabhijarena, without any prostitution of the philosophy, one who is following the philosophy very rigidly. What's that philosophy? Philosophy is this. Krishna is saying there that one who has taken my shelter, I look after him. One who has taken, accepted this wholeheartedly in his heart, Krishna says he is qualified for spiritual life. Mamchayo avyabhijarena bhakti yogena sevida, who serves me in bhakti yogam process without any deviation from that, Sagunan, Samadhi Tedan, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpade. Very soon, Krishna says that he will come to me. He will come to this platform of self-realization. Come to the platform of self. We think that Shastram is so much to study, so much to practice, and one day it will happen. This is why all of us think about spiritual life, isn't it? Krishna is saying it's not like that. It can happen right now, provided we accept this. Like these people, personalities who have accepted it. They have accepted the reality, the truth. They were able to accept it. Because we don't accept it, therefore it's taking longer time. That's all the thing is about that. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, if you look, repeatedly Krishna is referring this. Bhaktyamam abhijanadi yavan yaschasni tatvada. There is a verse in the, I think it is in the 18th chapter. Bhaktyamam abhijanadi yavan yaschas tatvada tadomam tatvado jnatva vishade tadanandaram. Important verses in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is saying there, bhaktyamam abhijanadi, when you have taken the bhakti process, you will come to know me, what I am, and yavan yaschasmi tatvada, and who has understood me in tatvam, in truth. Tatvada means in truth. And tadomam tatvado jnatva, if you have understood me in tatvam, in that proper way, Vishade tadanandaram, he enters into me. That's the word. It's an important verse. It is just before that Sarvadharman Parityajya verse. It comes. Bhaktyamam abhijanadi yavan yaschasmi tatvada tadomam tatvado jnatva vishade tadanandaram. He says that after that, what happens to him? He enters into me. He, in other words, he becomes realized and he comes to the platform of self-realized state. It will happen to him. So, bhakti discussed in the Bhagavad Gita is in that state, not in the state of sadhana bhakti, what we are talking about. Here, it's all realization, nothing but realization. Whether, if you read that story, when I read this lady who walked this 25,000 miles, if you read that, I will say this, she is higher than any of our sannyasis. I have to say this, there's nothing you can do about it. Because she has got there. Which we are all trying through our sadhanas and all these things for years and years. You are executing sadhana. And years you are trying to get there. But she has already got there, where you have to get. That realization has happened to her. How can you deny that? Otherwise, her life, when you read it, it is a perfect demonstration of a sannyasi's life. Perfect sannyasi's life. No attachment to this world, totally dependent on Krishna, Krishna's mercy, and living in this world, and peacefully executing her mission and walking out of this world. This is sannyasam. How can you deny that? She may not be in saffron, she may not have a danda, but already consciousness is there. This is the point. That's what Krishna is saying here. Bhaktyamam abhijanadi yavan yaschasmi tatvada. Why? She has understood the tattva. Many others are still studying the books. What is tattvam, they are searching. She has already got it. She doesn't have to study the books anymore. Why? She has practically experienced herself and realized it. What do you need the books for after that? Yavan ischasmi tattvada tadomam tattvado jnatva vishade tadanandaram. After that, you enters back into to the Krishna, goes back to Krishna. So there, that was only an example. Like that, there are many people, unknown people, whom we may not know even, who are living in this world, executing spiritual life in that way. We, because we are engaged in propaganda and institution and all that, we tend to think that everything happens within only here, nowhere else. But that is a big blunder, to think like that. There are many, many people who are executing spiritual life with deeper understanding on a much deeper level. And we have to look up to them for their guidance and their help, because it's they who have practically realized it. So a realized soul is a personality who had much more to offer than anyone else. That is why in this Bhakti Sutram later on, Sri Narada Maharshi will say, how will you understand bhakti? He says, Mahal Kribayaiva. Only Mahatmas who have realized it can give it to you, tell you what it is like. You can keep on discussing about bhakti, verse after verse, and talking about it, but Mahal Kribayaiva, only their Kriba will make you understand that what realization has to happen. So generally they are talked about like this, that between a jnani and a bhakta, two examples are given. Jnani is the worst personality, that jnani will say, I want to become the sugar. I want to become the sugar. Devotee will say, I want to taste the sugar. These two examples are normally given. Jnani will say, I want to become the sugar. And bhakta will say, I want to taste the sugar. But there is also a problem. If you eat too much sugar, you will get diabetes. That's also there, associated with this. So bhakti is not something that you just taste the sugar all the time, or all the sweets, all the cakes, everything. Not that. But if you engage in too much of eating sugar, it can also turn into diabetes. You will get diabetes, isn't it? Too much sugar means diabetes. The sugar won't get diabetes, you will get diabetes. That's the most interesting thing. So anyway, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in the Bhagavatam, there is a verse which Mahaprabhu was very fond of repeating this, on which he gave this famous commentary, 64 different commentaries on that particular verse, isn't it? Almaramaschamanayo nargrandhavi urukrame kurvandi haidukim bhaktim itham bodaguno hari. That Krishna's transcendental qualities attracts whom? Almaramas. Almarama means one who has reached this parabhakti state. It's only about, see, even in the Bhagavatam also, all discussions is centered around those devotees who are in the parabhakti state. Almaramaschamanayo nargrandha abhi urukrame kurvandi ahaitukim bhaktim itham bhudaguno hari. That Krishna's transcendental qualities were attracted to by these sages, great personalities, almaramas. That means they are in this pure state of the spiritual state of the soul. Nargrandha abhi urukrame, their attachment is broken completely with this world. Grandhi means the hard knot of attachment in this world, to family, to society, to the land of birth, to the community, and all kinds of attachments what we have in this world, that's completely cut off, completely broken. Nargrandhi abhi urukrame kurvandi, what do? They execute spiritual life ahaidugim bhaktim kurvandi urukrame. In other words, they will perform their bhakti towards Krishna. Urukrama is Krishna. Ahaidugim bhakti. Without expecting anything in return, they are serving Krishna. They are engaged in bhagavad bhakti. Bhakti to Krishna. Itam buddha guno hari. Why? They were attracted by the transcendental qualities of Krishna. So, it is on a much higher platform this bhakti is happening. On a much higher state. It's not in the ordinary people. We also execute bhakti. Why? Our execution of bhakti is on a totally different level, isn't it? So that's what, and such people who are executing that bhakti, Sri Narada Maharshi had an opportunity to instruct them, isn't it? If you see that Prahlada, Dhruva and all that, and similarly Hariashwa, Shabalashwa, and also you will see in the Bhagavatam many other personalities whom Sri Narada Maharshi instructed. And they were all taken to that state straight away by Narada Maharshi's. So why, whoever came into contact with Sridharada Maharshi, they used to ask Narada Maharshi about bhakti. They used to asking about bhakti. So when Sri Narada Maharshi saw that people are asking all questions about bhakti, he wanted to present it in a scientific way to them. And that is how Narada Bhakti Sutram was written. He felt the need, because otherwise what will happen is that in order to make Bhakti Yogam properly understand people, he wanted to give a scientific presentation of the bhakti process to them. Otherwise, he realized is that people will misunderstand about bhakti. Very easy to misunderstand bhakti. For example, a yogi comes and he performs some magic in this world. Immediately people become a devotee of that. So many people like that, isn't it? They perform some miracle. If they perform, immediately you become a devotee. He says, he's a great devotee. You follow after him. Or in the same way, if one has a lot of material desires and he keeps on praying to fulfill all the material desires, and by his good karma, so material desires are getting fulfilled, he says he starts glorifying Krishna at that time. And then people will start saying, look at him, he's such a devotee, he's been worshipping Krishna, and Krishna is giving him everything, all sorts of money and all material opulences. People will misunderstand. This is all misunderstanding about bhakti. So Narada Maharshi realized that this problem can happen in the process of bhakti. So when he realized that, he felt that for those who are coming into this process of bhakti, they should have a proper guide for them to look at, to understand what is bhakti, and therefore he felt the need to compile this science of bhakti. So he decided at that time that in order to explain bhakti properly, I'll explain that in the light of my own realizations. Sri Narada Maharshi's realizations are very famous in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Narada Maharshi says, isn't it, that the whole of 5th and 6th chapter in the first canto, this Sri Narada Maharshi's realizations on bhakti, what he talks to Vedavyas, and that's how Srimad Bhagavatam was written. So, after saying that, first thing, this is all about the first one. That means, when Sri Narada Maharshi Narada Maharshi says here, Atha Bhaktim Vyakhyasyama, this is how he begins the first sutram in the Narada Bhakti Sutra. So, this first sutram is simply talking about the background in which he wants to comment of his realizations about bhakti. After saying that, in the next sutram, in the second one, if you look, you will see there, he says there, what is bhakti means? Swatva asmin parama prema rupa. That is the definition of bhakti, what Sri Narada Maharshi gives. Bhakti means swatva asmin parama prema rupa. That's all he said. What bhakti means? Swatva asmin parama prema rupa. In other words, you can look at bhakti from two positions. From the position of a personality who is executing bhakti, trying to execute bhakti or sadhana state, and a personality who has realized the perfection in bhakti, who has reached the perfect state of bhakti. Two states, sadhana and siddha, it's called. So here, he says here, the sadhana state, when one has in the sadhana state, the instructions that's given to him is coming from the siddha state, from the perfectional personalities. So, sarvatraivahi adhyalpa shastre kridartha lakshanani yani tanyeva sadhanani upadishyande yatna sadhyatval. This is a commentary on that. He says here that if you know the goal very well in your mind, then the chances of getting lost in the process is little. If you know the goal well, you have to know the goal very well. Why am I engaged in bhakti process? And if you know that goal well, the chances are very little that you will get sidetracked. For example, those who are attracted by the magic of this yogis, or those who are attracted by the material opulences of this world, they are actually distracted from the process of bhakti. Isn't it? Why? Because they don't know the goal. They are thinking that reaching this state of opulence in life, a high state of opulence, is bhakti. Or getting this different Aishwarya Siddhis. Aishwarya Siddhis means this different kind of mystic powers. You know, Krishna discusses these mystic powers in the Bhagavatam. So many yogis are there who have got mystic powers. So reaching this state of different mystic powers is the goal. Some people misunderstand either. Why? because they have not understood the goal yet of bhakti. Bhakti's goal is not a mystic power. Bhakti's goal is not material opulences either. There is something higher than that. That is what he is discussing in this second sutram. Sva tu asmin parama prema rupa. That is what he says here. In other words, sarvatraivahi adhyatma shastra. In all spiritual science, kridartha lakshanani means the ultimate goal is stressed very much, what it is. Because if you don't know what the goal, where you are going at the end, then what's the point in struggling for this, when you don't know what the goal is at the end? Kridartha lakshanani yani tanyeva sadhanani upadishyante. In the sadhana state itself, you have to remind that person about it. In the sadhana state, not later. So that he does not get sidetracked to any of the other things. And that's why Narada Maharshi is saying straight away, sa tu asmin parama prema rupa. That how to develop that pure love for Krishna without any desire inside. Simply able to love Krishna without expectation anything in return from Krishna, but simply able to love him without any desire for. That won't happen easily, because that's why all this sutram was written, to tell us. We may say, oh, I love Krishna. Some people say like that, I love Krishna so much. Yes. People talk, you can say that with the lips, but the activities don't show that. Activities is that showing that still very much attached to material life and material enjoyment. So that is not pure love. Here, the love what Krishna is talking, Narada Maharshi is talking about is sa tu asmin parama prema rupa. That in his heart, there is no other desire except Krishna. Except Krishna. So, in order that the devotee has to go further and to progress further, this goal, Svatvasmin Parama Prema Rupa, should be kept in the heart. That is the goal. And that's why it says, Sadhanani Upadishyande. Sadhana state itself, he should be instructed about this. Yatna Sadhyatval. So that he reaches the goal eventually. Sadhyam. Sadhyam means, sadhana is the process. Sadhaka is the one who is executing that. Sadhyam is the goal. So, in order for a sadhaka to reach the sadhyam, he requires sadhana. What we consider the sadhana. So, in the sadhana process, this should be informed to him. So, so sa tu asmin. See, the each word is very significant there. Tu. Tu means, he says there, that many people have misunderstood bhakti in many ways. So many rituals we learn. Isn't it? In the bhakti process, this is all a part of the bhakti process. We learn a lot of rituals also. And we start misunderstanding so many things. We think that shaving the head of the baby is a part of my bhakti process. or in other words, marriage is considered to be a part of the bhakti process. We'll say we are going to have Krishna conscious children, therefore I'm getting married. All kinds of twist and tweaks we give to it, isn't it? Because I am a devotee, I am doing getting married, and I am getting married in the proper way. It's also part of my bhakti process. And everything, like that, so many rituals we get involved in life, isn't it? Marriage ceremony, then similarly, name giving ceremony. We make a big ceremony out of it, thinking that that is required for bhakti, to develop bhakti process. Similarly, anything, any rituals for that matter, if you take in our spiritual life, any rituals we perform, we get misunderstood by all that and go in that direction. Because inside there's a lot of material desires for sense enjoyment. And we want to keep all, give a spiritual coloring to it. Everything. We give a spiritual coloring to it. And not only that, Narada Maharshi wants to tell us, there is a very clear demarcation, sa tu asmin parama prema rupa, that only when you are related with Krishna, in the pure way, with pure consciousness, it's bhakti. Not with all other rituals, he says, throw it away. It has nothing to do with bhakti. That is there, that has come to this world, because in a society, to keep some peace within the society, some systems have been formulated of marriage ceremony. And similarly, in the Vedic tradition, when the Varnashrama Dharma existed, Varnashrama Dharma created all this Shraddha ceremony, name-giving ceremony, and Samavattanam Vivaham, there was purificatory ceremonies, they are called. That is the part of Varnashrama Dharma. It is not Bhagavata Dharmam. You have to remember that clear differences between Bhagavata Dharmam and Varnashrama Dharmam. In Varnashrama Dharmam, all those things exist. But here, in the Bhagavatam, as well as in the Bhakti Sutram, Krishna is only talking about one thing, Bhagavata Dharmam, not Varnashrama Dharmam. Bhagavata Dharmam is stressed here. What is Bhagavata Dharmam? Bhagavata Dharmam is leaving everything else in this world and going to Krishna, looking for satisfying Krishna, pleasing Krishna. That is Bhagavata Dharmam. And a person who has come to that state, he has gone beyond Varnashrama Dharmam. He has gone beyond Varnashrama. But it is not easy. We know that. It is not easy because of all the vasanas inside. So, anyway, Narada Maharshi says here, Bhakti, if you understand the way Narada Maharshi explains, it makes a lot sense also. Otherwise, it won't make any sense. We will get completely misled by all what is done in the name of Bhakti. We get to think, oh, I am not doing this, I have not done this, I have not done that. You start thinking all these things. So where do I stand then? This thought will come. But Narada Maharshi wants to stress this point that all the ajaram, ajaram means all kinds of practices, what we have developed in our spiritual life, in the name of Bhakti, he says, keep them away for the moment. At least don't mix them with this. Because many people who have, they'll be doing all these kind of rituals very well. And why? The only goal inside is how to advance in the material life. With that intention inside, they'll perform all the other things properly. But that is not Bhagavata Dharmam. Bhagavata Dharmam is different. Here, there is no interest anymore in this world. The only interest is how to please, satisfy Krishna. If you come to that state, you can leave everything else. It is there in the Bhagavatam also. That when we discuss later, we'll see that. So, actual pure bhakti and the bhakti, that kind of bhakti contaminated with ritualism and contaminated with all other things, he says you keep them separately. Now, Narada Maharshi's discussion on bhakti is on a different level. So, to asmin parama prema rupa, he says, parama prema, pure love for Krishna has developed in a person's heart. He is a devotee. Number one. Number two, he also says, Shishubala, Kamsa, Jarasandha and Putana, they are all devotees as far as Narada Maharshi is concerned. Why is that? If you look into Bhagavatam, these verses, Yadha vairenu bandena martya tanmayadam yad na tadha bhakti yogena itime nishchidamadi. If you look into the seventh canto, you will see a verse there, like this. He says there, Yadha vairenu bandena, these Jaya and Vijayam, when they fell from the Vaikuntha planet, they had to come here, isn't it? And they had to accept three births. First in Hiranyakshi and Hiranyakashipu, Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and then Shishupala and Dandavatra. Three bodies they had to accept, isn't it? Three bodies they had to accept at that time. But when they came here from the Vaikuntha planet, they did not take to the process of bhakti in a loving way, isn't it? They didn't take to the process of bhakti in a loving way. They came as enemies to Krishna, enemies to Krishna. So when they came here, all of them realized, both Jayavijaya, when they came as Hiranyakshi and Hiranyakashipu, and similarly Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and later on Shishupala and Dandavatra, they were all decided to fight against Krishna. They come with that motive inside. We will fight and we'll come back to the spiritual world. That was their thinking. Because this is in Bhagavatam, it's called Sambhramba Sambhrada Samadhi Yogam. This yoga process. It's also a yoga process. Ultimately, you're going back to Krishna. And they were very clever because they knew very well that if we fight with Krishna, the chances are we'll get back quicker. They are intelligent. They made it in three lifetimes. We are here 300 million lifetimes. Still we have not got anywhere yet. This is the truth. The truth is there. You can't deny the fact. They made it at least in three lifetimes. They got back. So when Jayavijaya came here, they knew very well that we will follow this process. We will fight against Krishna through and through all the way. And protesting and abusing Krishna, Shishupala went back. Isn't it? 100 times, 101st time, Shishupala, you can go back, he said. As far as Krishna is concerned, he is not seeing us as devotee or a demon. He is not seeing it like that. What he is seeing us is how much he is thinking about me. That's all it matters to him. Whether you are thinking in the form of a demon or whether you are thinking in the form of a devotee, are you thinking about me? That's the question. So that is why he gives to those who thinks about him all the time, absorbed in him, they can go back. Our problem is we have neither love nor hate. This is our state. This is why the difficulty is. That is why it's taking such a long time. If you hate him very well, if you can hate like the way Shishupala has hated Krishna, you can go back. Only thing is you lose your body. So what? You'll get another body when you get there. It's not such a big deal, isn't it? So this is interesting. Narada Bhakti Sutram is trying to tell us this reality. Because it's Narada Maharshi, if you remember in the Saptamaskandam in the Bhagavadam, it is Narada Maharshi who spoke to Yudhishthira Maharaj about this. He's saying, Gopya Kamal Bhayal Kamsa Deshya Chaityadayo Nrubaha Sambhando Vrishnaya Snehal Yuyam Bhakti Avayam Vibho. That is where Narada Maharshi is opening up this technique to us. He says, you don't have to be only a devotee like the gopis have come to Krishna out of lust. Lusty desires they had. But it turned into pure love. Bhayal Kamsa. Kamsa story you know in Bhagavadam. Asina Samvishastrishtan Paryadam Munjanin Mahim. He says, Kamsa, 12 long years, Kamsa had only one thought about Krishna. Continuously thinking about Krishna. While sitting, he's thinking about Krishna. While walking, Asinam Samvishastrishtan. While walking, he is thinking about Krishna. Bunjanam, while eating, he's thinking about Krishna. And when he was traveling, he's thinking about Krishna. So, Apashyat Tanmayam Jagat. Wherever he looked in the Krishna, everywhere he was only seeing Krishna. Because of the fear. Krishna created so much fear in his mind that he's going to come and kill him. That he felt the need. He got so frightened that he was thinking about Krishna all the time. So Krishna says to Kamsa, you can come back now. Although it's his uncle, but Krishna's uncle, he says, you also come back now. Why? You are qualified because you are thinking about me all the time. So Kamsa went back like that. Shishubala, as you know the story, how he thought about Krishna all the time. He just couldn't bear to hear that name, Krishna's name. We say we have to chant 192 rounds, isn't it? Shishubala says, I won't even chant once that name. He won't even say the name Krishna. He will say he, referring to Krishna. That's how you, so much hate inside against Krishna. So Krishna says, you come back now. You are also qualified, says. Why? He was thinking about Krishna all the time. That's why so much hate inside. So this hate has got a higher strength than love. So that's why all these personalities who have come to this world, Kamsa and all the other demonic personalities, they all went back through that process. As far as Krishna is concerned, they are as dear to me as you are, anyone else is concerned, because they have all thought about me. That's what Krishna expects from the devotee. So, manye suran bhagavadam tradhishe sambrambamargha abhi abhinivishta chittan ye samyuge achachada tarksha putra amse esunabha ayudam apadandam. Uddhava says this to Vidura in the third canto. If you look at this verse, you will see there. He will say there that by thinking about Krishna in the mood of enemy or hating him in that way or through fear, how much you can absorb in Krishna, you can never reach that state through pure devotional service. You cannot get that. Because you can see, when you are frightened of Krishna, somebody, you are always thinking about him. Isn't it? Similarly, when you have hating somebody also, you will think about him. But if you love somebody, you won't think about him so much. That is the psychology behind it. Isn't it? The psychic nature is like that. You hate someone, you will think about that person all the time. If you are frightened of someone, you will think about him all the time. But if you love somebody, you will occasionally maybe think about him. Or you keep a photo of him in table somewhere and keep him at that distance. Or this photo is there. Whenever you look at it, probably you may remember. Otherwise, your mind will go in another direction. So, here Uddhava is saying to Vidura that all these demons who have fought with Krishna, who all, in the Bhagavadam you know that Salva, Salya fought with Krishna. Remember that famous story? Salya, Dandavakra, Shishupala, all these big, big demons who have come and fought with Krishna. Only difference is, although they are demons, they are actually Bhagavadas, he says. Only thing, they have taken the process, another process called Samrambha Yoga. They have accepted that. And why they were fortunate that they were getting killed all the time by Krishna on the, while Krishna was on the top of the bird, Garuda. On Garuda's carrier, he was sitting there and he was killing them all. So Vidura says this to Uddhava. So this is the Siddhantam of Bhagavadam. Bhagavad Siddhantam is like this. It does not matter how you approach Krishna, but you have to get absorbed in Krishna. In which way it happens doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But the difficulty is that it is not possible to hate Krishna or to get frightened of Krishna like the way the Jaya Vijaya had that experience. Because when they had come here, they asked Krishna before they left to Vaikuntham, how can we get back quickly without spending a long time in this material world? So Krishna gave this option to them, that you take this position and then you will get back. You will be more absorbed in me and you will get back here quickly. Whereas if you go back there and want to become pure devotees and come back, it may take some few million lifetimes before that happens. So this was Krishna's arrangement with them. They signed this agreement before they left Vaikuntham and came here. So they got the ticket with them. That's why they were able to do it properly. In other words, even in our spiritual life, everything is not in our control. To a large extent, it is Krishna's control is very strong in us. So in order to get back very quickly, they took that process. So they did not take that in order to cultivate hate for Krishna. That's not the reason for that was they realized that this Tasmal, if you look into Bhagavadam, there is a statement there. Rupa Goswami quotes this. Yena kena pipayena mana Krishna niveshayat. Have you seen that verse? In the 10th canto it mentions there. Somehow or the other, yena gena pivayena, doesn't matter whatever means you want to adopt, doesn't matter. Mana Krishna niveshayat. Mind should get absorbed in Krishna. That is the goal. Dhyanam, meditation must happen about Krishna. If that happens, you have made it. You have made it. You can go back at that point. So that is why he says here, yena gena pivayena mana Krishna niveshayat. Bhagavadam, there is verse. And it is in relationship with the question was asked to Krishna that why, how come that somebody who is worshipping Krishna becomes pauper and somebody who becomes Shiva becomes wealthy? A question somebody raised that in the Bhagavadam, you can see. At that time, Krishna's answer was this: when I want to bless someone, first thing what I do is I'll take away everything from him. Not that I'll give everything to him. I'll take away everything from him. And when I take away everything from him, what will happen to him is that he'll become helpless. And up to that point, he had a lot of faith in his relatives and community and friends and all that. When he become pauper and totally helpless, then he will give up his faith in the friends and society and he'll come and take my shelter. Krishna says that in the Bhagavadam, isn't it? At that point, Sukadeva Goswami says to Parikshit, Parikshit, the purpose is at the end, somehow or the other, your mind has to get attracted to Krishna. Yena gena bi upayena mana Krishna niveshayat. Somehow or the other, the mind should get absorbed in Krishna. That is the goal. How it happens doesn't matter. That's not important. So these devotees who are in the guise of demons, who Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Shishupala, Dandavatra, Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, they are devotees, but they have come in the guise of demons, isn't it? Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, they are all demoniac. Just they were in their original form, they were serving Krishna in Vaikuntham. How can they be demons? So they come in the guise of demons here, and they accepted this process because they knew this process is quicker. Becoming a demon and hating Krishna and fearing Krishna and getting back. So therefore, because Vairanu Bandhanam, he says, Vairanu Bandhanam means through enmity, enmical relationship, you can easily absorb in Krishna in a much deeper level. Deep absorption you will get in the mind. They knew that Shastram well. So therefore they followed that process. So why, when that happens, the meditation becomes much deeper. You see, remember we are discussing this chapter, Dhyana Yogam, now in Bhagavad Gita. You can see that in order to remember Krishna, we have to do in our meditation, how to bring, we have this process discussed in the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which form of Krishna we have to meditate upon, and part by part of Krishna's body, how to fix inside, and eventually the whole form. And Kapila Maharshi says in the third canto, Krishna says to Uddhava in the 11th canto also, the dhyanam process. And same thing, Krishna discusses one whole chapter, the 6th chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, with Arjuna about the dhyanam process of dhyanam. So the goal is to somehow or the other, the meditation to start inside, to remember Krishna like that. But Dhyana Yoga process is so difficult to remember Krishna in that way. And in order to get that dhyanam is the last stage before samadhi, isn't it, in the yoga system also. So to get that stage is not so easy. It takes a long period of training the mind and mind, and you won't get that intensity in dhyanam, in meditation, very easily. You won't get that intensity in the normal way. It is not possible. But it is that intensity that is giving them this opportunity to escape from this world. Samrambha Yoga, what that is called. Actually, it is a shortcut. This Samrambha Yoga is a shortcut for that. So, strictly speaking, in the second sutram, Narada Maharshi says, Sa tu asmin parama prema rupa, that pure love for Krishna and this pure hate for Krishna, there is no difference. Pure love for Krishna and pure hate for Krishna, practically there is no difference. There is no contradiction there. Why? In both, you are absorbed in meditation of Krishna. You are thinking about Krishna. Only difference is that he is seeing, the demon is seeing Krishna as is the great enemy of him, and he is hating him in that way. A devotee is seeing Krishna as his protector and surrendering to him and taking his shelter. As far as Krishna is concerned, they are both qualified to come back to him. So that is the important thing. So then Sudev Goswami says, if Kamsa, Shishubala and others who have approached Krishna in this way, if they can be offered liberation, will the ordinary devotees who come to Krishna in a humble and submissive mood and serving him, will they not get liberation? Is asking that question. Uktam purastade datte chaidya siddhim yathagadaha dushan abhi govindam kimuta athokshaja priyaha. In the Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, he says here, Uktam purastade datte chaidya siddhim yathagadaha, that Shishubala, who has constantly abused Krishna, he had gone back to Krishna. If it is like that, Dushan abhi govindam kimutha dhokshaja priyaha, one who is serving Krishna with loving and devotion, will they not be accepted by Krishna? So Dev Goswami himself is saying, in other words, he is saying that as a devotee, if you approach Krishna, is still better. Other thing is not possible for everyone. Like Kamsa, to hate, to be frightened of Krishna, we are not frightened of Krishna. Why? Because Maya won't allow you to become frightened of Krishna. Maya will put the brake. Maya will say, stay here, you'll be alright. You are covered. Insurance is there. Maya's insurance is there. So Maya won't allow us. We will see people dying right in front of our eyes. We'll still think, oh, after some mistake happened to him, it's not happened to me. In this state we are going on day after day in this world, isn't it? So death is happening right, left and the center. But we won't notice it. We still think, I got plans for the future. My retirement plans. And after that what happens? All these kind of things are happening inside. So, Vairena yam narpadaya Shishubala paundra salvadayo Gedi vilasa viloganadyehi Dhyayandamakradadiya shayanasanado Tal samyamam apurana anurektadiya punakim. In the, he says here, Nirbhadaya Shishubala Paundra. Shishubala was the personality who hated Krishna so much. who would not even say Krishna's name. What to talk about chanting the holy name? He will just even say the Krishna's name. And Paundraga Vasudev, you know that story in the Bhagavatam, who dressed up like Krishna, isn't it? Paundraga Vasudev's story is famous. And he sent a message to Krishna, to Dwaraka, saying that, look, you are not Vasudev, I am Vasudev. Come and surrender everything to me. If you don't surrender within the next 30 days, I'm going to send the army. Krishna says, all right, I'm coming now to surrender. He says, in the Bhagavatam, that famous story, Paundraga Vasudev's story. And the interesting thing is, when this person, representative from Paundraga Vasudev, is called Paundraga Vasudev because he had some friends with him. And these friends told him, Krishna in Dwaraka is not the real Vasudev, you are the real Vasudev. And somebody tells you, few people, all the time, you are somebody great and you are some great personality. Immediately you start thinking one day, I am a great personality. This will happen, isn't it? That's what we see all the time happening. So these Paundraga Vasudev's associates, this is what they did to him. They made a fool of him. That they knew his weakness, that he gets easily pulled by all these things. So they kept on telling him that, look, the Vasudev in Dwaraka is just a cheater. He is not Vasudev. You are the Vasudev. You should ask him to surrender to you. So a few days he told, but he had these doubts in him. That in the Bhagavatam it is very nicely explained. He had the doubts in him that Vasudev in Dwaraka has got four-handed form. I don't have four-handed form. He says, what's the problem? We can make that for you. So with the wood, he's created another two hands and handed over him all the weapons, conch shell, disc, lotus flower, everything, and told him, you are the Vasudev. And they tested it before they sent the letter to Krishna with the strings and all at the back. The two hands will come up when the strings fall from the back. All that is there in the Bhagavatam. What is interesting there is that when Krishna was in the assembly in Dwaraka, Ugrasena was there, Uddhava was there, and all the other, Akrura was there, Kridharma, so many great personalities were there in that assembly, all the Yadavas were present there. This personality from Paundraga Vasudev, his representative had come there, and hands over this letter to Krishna, to read it. When Krishna read the letter, in Bhagavatam, Sudeva Goswami says there, Vijahasa Brisham Hari, Krishna laughed after reading the letter. Never Krishna laughed like that before. In such a way he laughed when he read that letter. So he says, and all the other people when they came to read the letter, they also thought this must be a case which required. They all thought like that. But Krishna stopped them from saying anything to him. Krishna very cool, wrote back reply on the same letter and handed it back to him saying, in next 10 days time I'll come and surrender everything to you. And that's what Krishna has agreed. And after that, Krishna goes there to see, he visits Paundraga Vasudev. Paundraga Vasudev didn't come here. He goes to Paundraga Vasudev to see him. Krishna's mercy, I'm saying, how much Krishna merciful Krishna is. A personality, supreme personality of Godhead, who doesn't require any of this, he goes to visit him. And there is, between Paundraga Vasudev and Krishna, a lot of conversation happens. You say, Paundraga Vasudev asking Krishna, have you brought all your army? All your weapons to surrender unto me? Krishna says, yes, I brought everything, I'm ready. Then Krishna is asking him, are you ready now to receive my weapon? He says, yes. And then sees Sudarshana Chakram and cuts the throat. And then at that time, Sudeva Goswami says that a person who has no bhakti for Krishna, who just wanted to dress up like Krishna, him also Krishna has sent him back to the spiritual world. Just see the mercy, Krishna's mercy. That he had no bhakti for Krishna. He has not even chanted the holy name once. Never followed Ekadashi or any such thing. Never had any attraction for Krishna. The only way he thought about Krishna was like this, that he is my competitor. He's competing with me. I cannot have another competitor. And so he invited Krishna. Krishna comes to him and says, you also come back. So is there anyone more merciful than this? Sudeva Goswami says there. That is what it says. Shishubala Paundra Saluadayo. Saluva's story is well known, isn't it? In the Bhagavatam, when Krishna was in Indraprastham, when he went to see Pandavas there, at that time, this Salua went and worshipped Lord Shiva very intensely and acquired a special aeroplane from him, which is not visible. But it can do a lot of damage to
too. So he came and attacked Dwaraka with this aeroplane. Salva's attack was very famous. Pradyumna went to fight with him. But Pradyumna collapsed in the war, in the fight. Pradyumna also could not fight with him. So it was at that time Krishna comes back from Hastinapur and then sees the situation. At that time, Salva had a lot of mystic powers in him. Many, many different kinds of maya he started applying on Krishna and confused everybody. At one point, he had someone there who looked exactly like Vasudev, Krishna's father. And in front of Krishna, he cut his head, Vasudev's head. Everybody thought that he managed to capture Vasudev and killed him in the war. And seeing all these things, for a moment, Krishna was also in a shock. Actually, Sudeva Goswami says there, just to show to the world that Krishna is also affected. For a moment he showed. Then suddenly Krishna realizes that it was not a proper Vasudeva who has been killed. And then he kills Salva at that point. Salva gets killed and Salva goes back to the spiritual world as well. So, Shishubala, Paundra, Salva, Gati Vilasa, Vilokanadhyay. So, they were all competing with Krishna, or they all became envious of Krishna by seeing Krishna's beauty, one, or Krishna's, charisma or chivalry in him. That everywhere when they want to go and get married to some girls, the princesses, Krishna won't allow them. Krishna will go there and take the girls away from there. He'll marry them forcefully. So they were all having a very hard time because they were all princes from the royal families. And they won't accept Krishna as a prince at all. They say, you belong to the cowherd community. You are not from the royal family. We are all the royal family members. So in all the marriages, Krishna took away the girls. All the 8 marriages, if you start from Rukmini onwards, you can see many of the marriages, Krishna was their main competitor. And they couldn't marry the girls whom they wanted to. That is why Shishubala got upset with Krishna because of that. Rukmini's marriage caused a problem with Shishubala, isn't it? So Shishubala got upset like that, and from that onward, Shishubala, Rukmini, Jarasandha, they were planning how to finish Krishna. That was in their plan. But all of them, Krishna has given this mercy to them. You also come back. You hated me, fine. You competed with me, fine. You also come back. So, Gadi Vilasa Vilokanadhi. In other words, Krishna's activities, Vilasam, and Krishna's way Krishna walked, the way Krishna spoke, the way Krishna smiled, all these things was causing a little irritation in their mind. Gadi Vilasa Vilokanadhi. And by thinking in that way, they also became Krishna conscious. In other words, if it is like that, he says here, Dhyayanda akrita diya shayanasana ado tad samya ma apura anurakta diya punakim. If it is like that, even they can get liberated. How come those devotees who have surrendered to Krishna properly and taken Krishna shelter, do you think they will not get protection? This is Sukadeva Goswami saying to Parikshit at that point, to make it clear to him that the path of bhakti is such that if you have surrendered to Krishna and taken Krishna's shelter, there is nothing to be worried about. You will come to that state. So, after saying this, in order to say to us that constantly absorbing in Krishna, our thoughts, is the thing what is required, that intensity, how to absorb in Krishna. And in that way, to explain to us what is Swatvasmin Parama Prema Rupa, that Parama Prema, pure love for Krishna, when it develops, there is only one thought, that is the thought about Krishna. That is the thought about Krishna. In the Bhagavadam, if you look, when Srinarada Maharshi meets Vedavyasa Maharshi, before Srimad Bhagavatam was instructed, there is a conversation. What happened to Narada Maharshi, he says about himself. He said, after seeing Krishna, and after that relationship was established with Krishna, Krishna told him, now, Arabdha Karmamanam Nepadal Panja Bhautika. You have to wait in this world till you leave your material body. You have to wait till that drops away. But up to that time, sing my glories, sing my holy name, chant my holy name, and wander around in this world. This was the instruction they have given to Sri Narada Maharshi. So Narada Maharshi says to Vedavyas, my dear Vedavyas, when this happened to me, And Krishna disappeared from me, my face. And I was told that I will never be able to see him in this lifetime. I was told very clearly, I will not see him again. But he told me one thing, sing my glories, chant the holy name and wander around in this world freely. And you will come to that state, what Krishna calls it as that Krishna says there at that point, that you will not forget me anymore. You will not forget me anymore. So, in the in the when you reach that state, Narada Maharshi says to Vedavyas, Vedavyas, I was only in that state for a short time, and I realized that I have to remember Krishna. That is much more important. So while chanting the holy name and wandering in this world, my mind was absorbed in Krishna. This mind was absorbed in Krishna. And I realized that that absorption was very important. And in a natural way, the holy name came from my lips. He says like that. It's not that he chanted the holy name to remember Krishna. He remembered Krishna and the holy name came through the lips. There's a difference there, isn't it? We are all chanting the holy name and trying to remember about Krishna. Sri Narada Maharshi is saying, he was remembering Krishna so much that the holy name was coming out through his lips, which is the opposite way. The opposite way. So in other words, what Narada Maharshi is saying there is, that dhyanam, that meditation inside or remembrance Krishna is an important thing. Remembering about Krishna. And Bhagavata Dharmam is all about remembering Krishna at all stages. Karma we have to do. As soon as you have a material body, you have to do some karma in this world to keep this body going. But beyond that, all Bhagavata Dharmam, if you look, all the great devotees, none of them were sannyasis. Remember that also. Take for example, Tukaram, Ekanath, Yaneshwar. They are all the famous personalities in the devotional path, in bhakti process. Famous personalities. None of them were sannyasis. They were all householders. But if you look into their life, day-to-day life, you can see that they were absorbed in Krishna all the time. And body was doing various karma according to the particular situation there. Tukaram was a shopkeeper, wasn't it? Tukaram was a shopkeeper. You can read all these personalities in the internet. If you Google their names, they'll pull out enough for you to read through. Just to know about them, who they are. Yaneshwar, same thing. Yaneshwar's life was so much in trouble in the beginning. He was born from a sannyasi who took sannyas and then became a householder. In the Vedic tradition, they are rejected so much. If somebody comes back as a householder after sannyasam, he's rejected. And all the brahmanas in that village, they rejected him completely. And these four children were born. All of them were householders and none of them had any sannyasasam. But they were such devotees, they were perfection of Bhagavata Dharmam. Bhagavata Dharmam they have perfected. Same thing with Namdev. And similarly, Gaurakumbhar, he was a porter. Somebody was a weaver. Somebody was a goldsmith. Different professions they all had. And in being in that procession, simply absorbed in Bhagavata Dharmam, they made their life perfect. This is the beauty of Bhagavata Dharmam. They did not go living around everything and went to the Himalayas or taken sannyasam or this or that. Nothing happened. But they were perfect examples of Bhagavata Dharmam. What Srimad Bhagavatam is talking about. They have reached that state. So, the same thing what Narada Maharshi has spoken here, the same thing is spoken by Shandilya Maharshi also in his Shandilya Sutram. Shandilya Maharshi wrote Shandilya Sutram. And there is a commentary on that by a great personality called Swapneshwara. Swapneshwara got in Atri Smriti, that commentary is called, in that the same principle what Sri Narada Maharshi talks about in the Bhakti Sutram, he mentions there, Vidveshalabhi Govindam Dhamma Goshalmaja Smaran Shishubalo Gada Surgam Kim Puna Tal Parayana. He's asking the same question what Sukadeva Goswami is saying here. Vidveshalabhi Govindam That means Shishubala has vidvesham. Dvesham means hate towards Krishna. And Dhamagosha Atmaja Smaran Shishubalo. He was the king of Dhamagosha, isn't it? Chedi, Shishubala, Chedi, king of Chedi. And Dhamagosha Atmaja, Dhamagosha's son is Shishubala. Smaran, he remembered Krishna so well, and he went to the spiritual world. Kim puna tal parayanaha. If it is like that, how can you say someone who has surrendered to Krishna will not go back to the spiritual world? One who has surrendered to Krishna, that's important. That because surrender is not an easy thing. Surrendering to Krishna is not an easy thing. That is a realization. That is not a theory. It's a realization, that surrender. And when that realization happens, Krishna takes him back. When that realization comes to us. So that is why it says here that even lust, anger, all these emotions also, if it is directed towards Krishna, like the gopis, they directed their lust towards Krishna. Shishubala directed his anger towards Krishna. And even that has taken them to the spiritual world. Tadarpit agilacharam san kama krodha abhimanadiyam tasmin eva karaniyam. In the 66th sutram, he will say this later on, Narada Maharshi. So, Narada Maharshi says here, manogadir avichinna haro prema paripulada abhisandhi virmukta bhaktar vishnu vasham kari. Said, without any selfish motive, constantly able to absorb in Krishna and thoughts moving behind Krishna, and that is, he calls it as bhakti. Buddhadasya bhagavad dharma dharavahigatam gada sarveshe manasovratir bhaktirityabhidiyade. In other words, bhakti means, he says here, Buddhadasya bhagavad dharma, continuously hearing about Krishna, and after hearing a lot about Krishna, getting attracted by Krishna, and never that thoughts leaving from inside, completely becoming a constant process of flow of Krishna's thoughts inside, that he calls it as bhakti. Vrittir bhakti riti abhidiyade. And in the same thing, in the Jnanamargam also not much different. What do they say? They also say it's the same thing, isn't it? So swarupanu anusandhanam bhakti riti abhidiyade. If you have realized that your spiritual identity is the soul, and you have left this material body, the thoughts about this body, the thoughts about the mind, thoughts about the intelligence, ego, everything if you are left behind, and you are completely absorbed in the soul, so swarupa anusandhanam. Anusandhanam is the word used. Anusandhanam is a famous word in the Shastram. Anusandhanam means that you are pursuing that very vigorously, without giving anything else to interfere. Constantly pursuing behind the soul, searching for the truth. That is what it's called. So swarupam. So swarupam means your own swarupam. What my real identity, which is the spiritual identity. If you are chasing that, that is called bhakti. That's called bhakti. These all things must be remembered all the time. Otherwise, our bhakti will fall into ritualism and get carried away by all the other things. So this is the science of bhakti. So swarupanu anusandhanam bhaktiritya vidhiyade. Bhakti is referred to as when you are searching to your own real identity, who am I? When that search is happening intensely inside, that is bhakti. That is bhakti. Or mat gunashuddhi matrena mai sarva gunashraye manogadi avichina yadha ganga ambaso bhudohu. Lakshanam bhakti yogasya nirgunasya hudahradam ahaidukyavavihida ya bhakti purushottami. Who saying this? This is spoken, these two verses were spoken by Kapila Vasudevs to Devahudi Devi, to Mother Devahudi. He is saying to them, madgunashuddhi matrena, as soon as you hear about Krishna, when we say hear about Krishna, what does it mean actually? Hearing about Krishna means understanding what is Krishna first. What is Krishna? We think that Krishna is just a deity in the temple, or someone who came here 5,000 years ago, spent 125 years and gone back to another world. We don't know whether we will see him or not. That is not seeing Krishna. Hearing about Krishna means the science of Krishna, what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, understanding that and accepting that without any reservation. That is Madgunashuddhi Matrena. That means, what is Krishna? Krishna is the soul of everyone, present in this world all the time in all the living entities. He is the closest to us, right inside us, Antaryami, super soul, he is traveling with us all the time. And everything that is happening within this body, whether it is breathing, whether it is food digesting, or when we are able to walk, or we are able to operate any of our senses in any form, doesn't matter which senses of knowledge or senses of action, all this is happening only due to whose presence? Krishna's presence inside, isn't it? And being constantly aware of that is what is realizing Krishna means. Not that you see only him in the deity, I've gone and seen the temple for him this morning and came back and forgotten about Krishna after that. After that everything else, I'm this body, I'm this, I'm that. No. Only when we see Krishna in the way Krishna has spoken about him, like if you remember in the second chapter, when Krishna opens this topic of self-realization, he talks about what? What does he say about that about himself? He says there, isn't it? That our real identity, Arjuna, Krishna says to him, difference between you and me is this, that Krishna is always on the spiritual platform, always in the self-realized state. So everything spoken is also from the realized platform. Whereas we, conditioned soul in the bodily identity, are receiving the message, what is spoken from the spiritual platform. So therefore, we tend to bring everything to the material conditioned state and start identifying with it. And that is why we have to see Krishna in a particular form, in a particular place, in a particular time. Only then we feel that we have seen Krishna. But advanced and self-realized devotees, they don't see Krishna that way. They see Krishna who is present in everywhere, in everything. And without Krishna, nothing else exists in this world for them. All the great personalities are like that. They may not go to the temple. There's no need for them to go to the temple because they have reached that state already. That they are realizing that truth in that way. So here he says here, Mai sarva gunashraye manogadir avichinna yada gangambaso budhau. That means at a stage has come to them that just like all the rivers are flowing to the sea and gets dissolved in the sea, they lose their identity at that point. The rivers lose their identity. Similarly, yada gangambaso budhau. That means in the same way, their mind is going to Krishna without any interruption, completely absorbed in Krishna. It goes continuously towards Krishna in that way. And when if that happens, manogadir avichina, this mind is the one which normally takes us away from Krishna, isn't it? It gets absorbed in all the senses and sense objects and keeps us absorbed in millions of things. When the mind stops that and it gets completely absorbed in Krishna, completely absorbed in Krishna, never going away from Krishna, all the time holding on to Krishna and Krishna's instructions in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. When that happens, he says, then he is Krishna conscious. He is Krishna conscious. Lakshanam bhakti yogasya nirgunasya udahridam ahaidukya vavahida ya bhakti purushottame. That bhakti is above the sadhana bhakti. It's not sadhana bhakti anymore. It's gone beyond than that. In sadhana bhakti, you are trying to engage your senses. You are trying yourself. But for them, it's not trying anymore. Trying is finished. It's happening now. Without any effort. In a natural way, it is happening for them. And that is the bhakti, what he is discussing here. So, what's the time? 4:30? Yeah. 4:30, yeah. So, after saying this, So in principle, what he has to say is this. Narada Maharshi says like that this state of bhakti comes after self-realization. This state won't happen before. It's after self-realization this happens. This state of bhakti. So this kind of love for Krishna after self-realization and that kind of relationship with Krishna is called bhakti. Madhvacharya says this. So, some people, they get very emotional in bhakti, isn't it? They get very ecstatic while chanting or dancing. They cry, they smile, they dance, and various things when they do, they feel some excitement inside. Yeah? Some excitement inside. And we say ecstasy. So I was feeling very ecstatic kirtan, we say, isn't it? Ecstatic kirtan. We felt ecstasy, say so. So, that is only an emotional stage. Vigara paravasham it's called. Vigara paravasham means, your emotions are there, you are getting, emotions are touched. You have some emotions inside, that emotions have come out. That's all it is. And we misunderstand it as bhakti. As soon as you leave the kirtan hall, that also goes along with that. It leaves you straight away. But bhakti is not like that. That's what Narada Maharshi is pointing out. Bhakti is uninterrupted. Once it has really happened to us in that proper way, it will not leave you anymore. Then you don't care for this world, or you care for anything in this world for that matter. So if you have no proper realization on all these things, and through proper analysis all these things are not understood in the proper way, it is possible that this temporary excitement inside from emotions, that will be misunderstood. That will be misunderstood. We will sometimes say, somebody is dancing very well in the kirtan, he is feeling ecstasy. We'll say, oh, what a great devotee he is. He's dancing so well, and I'm not able to dance. I'm standing there like a dead wood on one corner. And people, when you are standing near to them, they pull you into it to dance, and you are not able to dance. What to do? It's a very difficult state, isn't it? And it's mostly who does this, young people. And people like me, old men, gets pulled into it. And they expect me to dance in the same speed. And then they hold you the hand like this too. And one roundabout with him. In the second roll itself, you fall. And the young man is standing there and laughing. You are not so advanced like me, are you? You are not able to dance like me. So all these complications comes from that. Why? Because he has misunderstood that that's all bhakti. It's only a temporary experience he has got because of the excitement inside. So it same happens to men, women, all. It's all the time, always happening, this kind of things. So, but when these young men, when they get old, they will also realize it's not possible to dance like that for all time. One day it will also stop. So bhakti is not like that. Bhakti, once it comes in, it will get increasing. If it has come to proper bhakti state, it will only increase after that. This does not mean don't dance. That's not what it's saying. You should dance, because in front of Krishna, you should enjoy chanting the holy name and dancing. That's not what it means. The only thing is, don't misunderstand somebody who's not dancing, that, oh, he has no bhakti. Do not take it that way. That's all it is. If you can, it is, Krishna himself says you should dance. Later on in the Bhagavatam, he says you should dance in front of Krishna. If you can dance, you should dance. But if you can't dance, don't worry about it. It's not, nothing is going to happen because of that. So anyway, coming to this point, Krishna is saying here that sometimes if you take all this excitement very seriously, what happens during the process of executing Krishna consciousness, when that excitement goes, the bhakti will also go, if it is that kind of bhakti. On the other hand, that's why bhakti is only perfect when you have properly understood Krishna's position. Who is Krishna? Not simply saying with the lips, oh, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's not good enough. You have to understand Krishna from the way Krishna has spoken about himself in Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam. With that understanding of the literature, particularly Bhagavad Gita as well as Srimad Bhagavatam, as Prabhupada has spoken about that here, after realizing that when one travels in this world, natural way the holy name will come out from his lips. In a natural way, seeing the glories of Krishna, Krishna's opulences, Krishna's glories, all these things will be inside, so strongly influencing him, in a natural way he will chant the holy name. So therefore, there is sometimes a misunderstanding that, oh, devotees should not use their thinking power. Should not use their thinking power. Devotees don't have to think about anything. But it is not like that. The fact is, Narada Maharshi is saying here, is that Krishna's form, Krishna's presence in this world is to be understood by meditation and by learning from the Shastram. When you study about Krishna from the Shastram, from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, you will know your limitation, how limited you are compared to Krishna's position. And knowing at that time, a natural humility will develop within the heart. In a natural way, humility will develop, and automatically bhakti and devotion to Krishna will come inside in the proper way. In the proper way, the relationship will come in that form. Therefore, in the end of Srimad Bhagavatam, you will see these words. Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam Yasmin Paramahamsyamegamamalam jnanam param giyade. When Srimad Bhagavatam is concluded, Sudha Goswami says to Shaunak Rishi that this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the science of Krishna, it is a science, perfect science of Krishna is spoken in the Bhagavatam. So this Srimad Bhagavata Puranam, Amalam, it's very, very pure. And it is very dear to Vaishnavas. Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. Why? Yasmin. If you study this Srimad Bhagavatam, it is called Paramahamsya Sabhida. Yasmin Paramahamsya Megam Amalam. Only Paramahamsas will study Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, one who has reached the pure state of Krishna consciousness can understand Bhagavatam. Jnanam Param Giyate. And what is spoken there? The highest knowledge in relation to the absolute truth. Param giyade. Jnanam param giyade. Param jnanam parabhakti. About Krishna is spoken in that book. Then, tatra jnana viraga bhakti sahidam. After realizing that knowledge, tatra jnanam associated with the vairagyam, renunciation has come from this world. And bhakti. Jnanam, vairagyam, bhakti. Three things. Knowledge, renunciation, and devotion. Three things. That is the goal of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhakti sahidam, naishkarmyam, avishkritam. That he comes to the state of naishkarmyam. That means there is nothing else for him to do in this world. Naishkarmyam stage. That means there is no karmam that is binding him. He is released from the platform of karmam. Naishkarmyam, avishkritam, yet shrinvan. If you hear Srimad Bhagavatam, vipathan. If you study Srimad Bhagavatam and then Vijarana paro, that if you constantly reflect on the science that is spoken in the Srimad Bhagavatam, what will happen? Bhaktya vimuchir nara. That pure state of bhakti will develop in a person's heart. That is why they all found shelter in the Bhagavatam. For this reason only, that this knowledge or shastram in the Srimad Bhagavatam can take a person up to that state. After realization, what one could be absorbed in. That's why Paramahamsas are discussing Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'll stop with those two sutrams today. We'll continue next Saturday. So we have about 20 minutes then. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.